Meeting will come to order. Now, I have a very organized and efficient committee administrator, and she's given me the agenda for the day with times. And the reason I'm gaveling us immediately at 8:15 is she has the following schedule. First bill, 8:15 to 8:32, then 8:32 to 8:49, then 8:49 to 9:06, then 9:06 to 9:23, and 9:23 to 9:40. She gives us 5 minutes there at the end, just in case we run over any of those. So my job, of course, is to discipline us, to keep us to that point. We have quite a few testifiers. We hope everyone tells the story briefly so that we have plenty of time for the last one. So these are informational hearings, so we're not moving bills, and Representative Lilly is up first. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for inviting us this morning and the opportunity to tell our story about this Veterans Memorial Park in East Metro. With me today, I have some folks that can kind of help us through and tell the story, and I'd like to start with Mr. Fisher here. If you're willing to, or is that
Dan Fisher is starting.
Oh, okay, yeah, we have a mayor. Change of, we have the mayor Mike Keene. So you know a little history, Mayor Mike Keene, he probably won't like this, but used to work in this building for Dick Historis for years, and so we ought to be nice to our staff, and because they're going to be running the world in other positions, so Mayor Mike Keene.
Welcome back.
Dear friend.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michael Keene, K-U-E-H-N. I'm the mayor of North St. Paul. And I also wanted to throw a shot back here at Representative Lilly because he served on our city council with me for 10 years. And we hope we send him down here as a well-behaved representative, but if he's not, please let us know and we'll have a talking. So
his sense of humor serves us well.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. But Madam Chair, and we will be done by 8:32, I can assure you. We are very proud to have the opportunity to present our bill today regarding the East Metro area Veterans Memorial. This is not a war memorial. This is a memorial to our veterans. And the reason we're appearing and asked that Representative Lilly and Senator Wieger to introduce the legislation is that we're very interested in and feel that this is a sub-regional or has regional and state impact. And let me state four reasons why we feel that. One is North St. Paul is an old freestanding community that became a suburb. And many people in Oakdale, South White Bear, North Maplewood, in the east side of St. Paul even, connect with North St. Paul, and many of them are members of our veterans organizations. When we started the memorial, the stones as well that are being sold to help finance the project, and you'll hear more about that in a few minutes, but the stones are purchased by residents and veterans family members. We don't have restrictions. You don't need to live in North St. Paul or any place else. We have veterans in several states even who have purchased memorial stones for the memorial. So we feel that's really a sub-regional significance at least. The second reason is it's very close to the State Gateway Trail, and we wanted to work with the DNR to make sure we have a connection that users of the trail will also use the stop by and visit the memorial. We had heard in our testimony in the Senate, in fact, one of the senators said that the redevelopment of the Victory Memorial Parkway and some of the veterans and tributes that are in that parkway is actually visited quite a bit by bikers who use the Grand Rounds Parkway in Minneapolis. So we feel there is a definite connection between trail users and the Veterans Memorial. The third part, and you'll hear a little bit more about it in a few minutes, is the educational aspects. This will include a walk of history that will present Minnesota and local participation in conflicts and promote the idea that, you know, freedom isn't free, that many people have served to defend their country's freedom. So we feel that there's educational aspects that we want to work with school districts throughout the Northeast Metro area to also participate and visit this memorial. And the last reason I couldn't leave without it would be our iconic snowman, our 46-tall North St. Paul snowman that many people stop and visit. It's amazing. Last summer I saw some folks from California license plates, and they went up and touched the snowman. I think they still thought it was snow, even though it was was the 4th of July weekend. But we do have a lot of visitors, and we do hope, again, the connection of the snowman, again, is very within 300 feet of this memorial. And we do feel as well that regionally people will stop by not only to see the snowman, because the memorial will be very eye-catching. Out in the street will be this large monument that's somewhat shaped like the state of Minnesota with a veteran pointing. And we think that will, nothing else, be eye-catching where people will participate. But it's been a long battle, and it's been a long road, but we feel we're getting close, but some state help would be very, very important to us. At this time, I'd like to introduce our next testifier, who will be our city council member and a member of the committee that's working on the memorial, city council member from North St. Paul, Terry Furlong.
Madam Chair, I'm going to interrupt for a second because, you know, we had a mayor here, and then we think of us as, you know, pretty big shots as legislators, but we have some royalty here.
Thank you.
Mr. Furlong was a part of the St. Paul Winter Carnival royalty, so he's a East Wind, right? And Terry Furlong's on the North St. Paul City Council also, and doing a great job. But
well, we will be duly respectful. Welcome to the committee, and it's Terry Furlong.
Terry Furlong, correct. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'd like to say it's been an honor and a pleasure to work with the team, as we call it, the team of veterans who have worked on this committee. It's been a few years now, and my role has been kind of facilitator in regards to the Park and Rec Commission for the City of North St. Paul, working with local community members, civic leaders, working with businesses throughout the area, trying to get them on board to buy bricks and to make some monetary donations. And as you can see, we've come a long way. We've raised quite a bit of money just these past few years. But the next thing that we need is help from the state in regards to the phase 2 and 3 of this monument. But I'd like to touch just a couple things in regards to one of our partners. And one of the legs of the star on the walkway is the junior ROTC program at the District 622 North St. Paul High School. Their partnership, working with the kids with the JROTC program, there's over 100 students, and the organization is growing. Their classroom at the high school actually overlooks the park. And to me, that was just a very moving detail in regards to how this partnership will work. These kids are very diverse. There's a lot of diverse kids in the group. But overlooking this park, to me, it's very much an educational park. I am not a veteran, but looking at these memorials, any memorial, I get moved, I get educated, and I think our kids seeing these memorials, especially a memorial so close to a high school, I think that's just a very educational part. And I think that our kids, like Mike said, the mayor said, that our freedom is not free. And these kids, I think, will learn that. So thank you, Madam Chair, and committee members.
We have one more gentleman to.
Yes, Madam Chairman, my name is Dan Fisher. I'm the co-chair of the committee. Council persons, thank you for listening to our story today. This project in 2010 was a resolution from the City of North St. Paul to rebuild on the site of Old Cannon Park. So a committee of 10 veterans and city fathers got together and did a new design phase with DSGW, our architect, and we came up with this plan here, which shows these six armed forces, their emblem and their motto. On the wall to each side of the panel are the 28 names of North St. Paul area veterans who gave all from World War I until recently. The greeter statue is actually a combat photograph of a North St. Paul veteran who was lost, with permission of his family and the combat photographer. We did a rendering to upgrade that so that it's reminiscent of today's veterans, so that they come in and they have acceptance. The red area, the bricks, these are the pavers that are sold. They're the primary fundraisers for our program. The $100 pavers are for individual veterans, such as this one from Roger Swanson, who was lost in Vietnam and still an MIA there in 1968. Group pavers at $1,000 have been coming in. We sold 335 of these at $100 a piece. The 8x8 pavers we've sold at $1,000, and groups like the First Shot Naval Vets, which is an iconic group to the state of Minnesota. They're all on the USS Ward at Pearl Harbor. They have a custom-made paver, and we've sold 25. This includes VFW, DAV, Military Order of the Purple Heart, AMVETS, city businesses that give an honorarium to the veterans. So it's become a community, an extension of the community. And the key one is this, the family ones. This has taken off in a domino effect, like families extending across the United States. We have veterans from 3 from the Civil War, 7 from World War I, Spanish-American War, families in California, Texas. Even veterans who weren't brought back home have a brick and a paver now at the North St. Paul Memorial. And we've been pretty successful. To date, we've raised approximately $83,000 in fundraising. Individual pavers was $33,000. Group pavers was $25,000. Total donations from cash and businesses, $14,000. And the city of North St. Paul graciously gave us from City Parks and Rec $10,000 in the land after the upgrade of Highway 36. We have extended families. One family has 15 pavers. We have to go through the extra work of grouping them. The mayor has 7 in his family that we're doing the puzzle to get everybody together. The park is designed as a contemplative park, not a war memorial. It's about service and sacrifice. Therefore, they are located on the red paths, which signify the blood shed, and it will be within the community, equidistant from the VFW, the Legion, next to the high school, City Hall, on a walkway, historical walkway, and also the bike paths. And it's made for people to go and actually observe the sacrifice that veterans make and their families make. It's been very fulfilling to work on this, very, very busy, and we're happy that we could come here today and tell you our story.
Representative Ward has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lilly, and members of the panel. First of all, thank you for your service, all of you that are veterans at the table and in the room here. We truly, truly appreciate it down here. We've got a number of veteran memorials up on the docket today. In my district, we are in the process of also planning and working for. We've got a welcome center up in Brainerd on Highway 371, and for the last 2 years, we've been working on a veteran memorial to go there, using MnDOT land, or hopefully using MnDOT land. I should say. is the land that this is on that's publicly owned right now?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, yes, it is publicly owned. It was a cannon. We called it Central Park, but it had a World War I cannon there for a number of years, and we became known as Cannon Park. MnDOT leased that for us during the reconstruction of Highway 36, and we have since acquired that property back. So it is city-owned property.
Okay, Madam Chair Ward.
And just a couple of our memorial is kind of hopefully future memorial is kind of replicated after, I think it's in Montana, that has the walls rather than the pavers, and the engraving is on the stones on the walls, and they actually hold a lot of veterans' funerals there and services there and all, you know, those kind of things. And there's significant operating costs. Two questions: What are your projected operating costs going forward for this memorial? And I didn't hear the total project, the cost. I know you're asking for $100,000, but maybe I missed it, Madam Chair. I don't know if you said that or
I'm
not.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Fisher?
Our treasurer, Command Sergeant Major Tom Trost, is presently at work at the VA hospital today. Our projected cost for Phase 1, which is primarily the plaza, the wall, and the flagpoles, were about $95,000. The additional cost of Phase 2, which is the greeter statue, about a 7-foot-high statue with the lighting, is an additional $50,000. And on top of that one, we have the landscaping, beautification, and security.
Walkway.
And the walkway, the educational walkway around the outside, which brings us for a total estimated cost of about $200,000. Now, we are presently doing second and third bids on all of our construction, which we see will have some benefits from. We're starting to realize those benefits, but that's required by the city for us to do that.
And so your goal would be to raise half the cost?
Yes, and right now we're just about to phase one at $83,000. So, and that's phase one is what I mentioned, the plaza and the wall.
The word follows?
And just what was the operate going forward? Do you have any idea?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, the way we plan on maintaining the property will be, because it is a city park, we will maintain it through our park fund, but we also have a very good cooperative. We have 105 students at North St. Paul Area High School that are members of the Junior Air Force ROTC program, and they're also going to play an important role in the maintenance and the keeping up the property as well.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I commend you for being here today. This is certainly a worthwhile, valuable recognition. And you maybe have answered my question already, and that is I was wondering how many bids you took on this. Are there a lot of companies out there that do statuary and artwork for these things?
Well, that's interesting because we're all representative. We're all rookies. We're not professional monument builders, so we're learning on the curve. And what we found is we confer with people like the Rochester Monument, which everybody should see because it just knocks your socks off. We go down there and ask them. We observe where their sources were, and they give us input so that the networking between the monument builders is significant. And so we've gotten our other bids on, like, granite stone and the paver bricks and the quality and design. Like these here, they're unique because they're laser etched and you have a custom silhouette like the ward or the emblem for a particular veterans group. But that's required by our applications to city services and legacy funds.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you for that information, and for those others who are presenting today. It might be interesting if you would also just say how many bids you've received, and if there are a lot of companies. I mean, I know of a studio in my district that does this type of work. If you're interested in that.
See him.
It's not me. But thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Lilly. Thank you for bringing this forward, and the rest of you, thank you for your services. And I know my community is working on a project, too. And I think it was back 6 years ago that Governor Pawlenty actually put it in statute that asking communities to start developing their own parks or memorial for our veterans, and I think it also stated that there should be matching funds, that the communities are matching funds, what are your costs, Madam Chair? What is your cost for the pavers? I know you got two different sizes there, and our community is doing the same thing, a large and a small paver.
Mr. Furlong?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The cost for the small paver, which is a 4x8, is $100. And then the 8x8, which is a corporate paver, is $1,000.
Okay. You know, I really believe that, these memorials can, for our veterans, can be a real education part of our communities. I know ours is, they're putting it right next to a park where kids play. And it will attract kids to come in and see what's going on with our veterans and how our community is supporting our veterans. So, again, thank you. And thank you for coming in.
Representative Lilly, closing comments.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, for hearing our story. It's it was just Representative Detmer reminded me that when Mr. Furlong was talking about the students that are involved, and it's over 100 and 105 students. But that program, just a little bit of legislative trivia, is run by Mark Biskin's brother, and is doing a fantastic job of getting these kids, and they put up the flag every morning at the high school, and just a great program. But thank you for your service, Representative Detmer, for our country and all of us. But no, thank you for hearing our story. It's I know we're not alone. There's quite a few of these around the state, and they're great projects, and it's really hard not to fall in love with them even more when you see the passion with these folks that are doing it. Mr. Fisher, you know, they have so many different other tentacles. He's also on at the Fort Snelling on the firing guard for, you know, so you might have
today.
But you know every year, I mean, he's out there for, we all go to those funerals, and he's out there doing that as well. But thank you for hearing our story.
Thank you very much. Representative Carlson's next up. And members, you have a few handouts. You have this one, and then there are also some photos at the end.
Maybe if the testifiers could...
Yes, down. Please, as many as we can get. We move more quickly if everybody's just up at the table. So, Mr. Rowe, okay. Mr. Mandel, Mr. David.
And, Madam Chair, this deals with the Minnesota Workers Memorial. And this is a memorial to Minnesota workers, and particularly those who were killed or injured on the job. And I would like to point out, however, that it is really for all workers who contributed to the building of our great state and the United States. The memorial, for those of you that may not be familiar with it, is located on the mall. It's west of Cedar Avenue near the Minnesota Women's Suffrage Monument. And I have with me here today several people to testify, but I'd like to have the lead testifier, David Rowe, an individual that I first met, by the way, back in the late 1960s, early 70s, when I was active in the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, Local 59. He may not remember that, but I do. And at the time, he was president of the AFL-CIO. He served with distinction in that role for many years, and then also was elected to the Board of Regents at the University of Minnesota, and is now President Emeritus of the AFL-CIO. And Madam Chair, if he could be the lead-off speaker on behalf of the memorial, and then we have at least two others, depending on time, that are available to comment.
Mr. Rowe, welcome to the committee.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to come here this morning and talk about the completion, really, of the Workers' Memorial. I might say that I retired in 1985, and I was 60 years old. That's 30 years ago. And one advantage, of course, of being 90, you have few enemies, because, you know, I think I've outlived most of them, you see. Let me first thank some people who've been very kind and helping me along with this project. Lynn Carlson, of course, Harry Sieben and Jim Carey, Harry Miranda with the State Building Trades, Morgan Fleming, Dick Anfang, all of have helped me. It was mentioned that I served on the Board of Regents for 12 years, and that was a great honor that the legislature gave extended to me. But when I think of my time on the Board of Regents, one thing stands out. In Samuel Gompers was the first president of the AFL, and one of the things that he said that stuck in my mind was, what we need is more schools and more books, less prisons and less bullets. And it reminded me of the, at the time it came to mind when I, as a member of the board, the recommendation was to close a great farm school in Waseca and I turn it into a federal prison. And I thought of Samuel Gompers at that time, and of the 12 members, former Governor Wendell Anderson and I were the only two votes opposed to it. And I don't know how many here representing that particular area, but from a fine school of education to a federal federal prison. The CAP board, Nancy Stark and Paul Mandel are here, and I want to commend them for what they have accomplished in setting in front of this Capitol a memorial to many different groups, to women, Roy Wilkins, the Black Americans, Hubert Humphrey, veterans, Korean, Vietnam, those who have died fighting for our country, and this memorial is there to memorialize those who have died in building this this country. I think of the mine disaster in the Kuna mine in on the range in 1924. I shouldn't remember that because I was born at the 1924. The sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. 50% of the fatalities are in agriculture and construction. This memorial will be speaking, and as I indicated earlier, to thank the CAP board and the legislature for commemorating all the various groups across from the Capitol. I don't think that there's a state that comes even close to doing what we've done here in memorializing the women, people like Hubert Humphrey, Roy Wilkins, World War II, the Korean War, just fantastic. And I'm here to applaud the legislature for providing those memorials. I've made many notes, and I don't know if I need to go back to them. I have folks here who can articulate this better than I am. I feel somewhat inadequate in speaking for those veterans and those people who have died on the job.
And is Mr. Mandel going to speak to the project itself? Is that?
Yes.
Pardon? Yes. Okay.
You finish up.
Pardon?
You finish up. I'll speak to the project.
So. Yeah. Well, let me conclude with that and call on Paul Mandel from the CAP board. Okay.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the Capital Area Planning Board. The wall, as it now stands, in the Memorial Garden, we have the you had the Peace Officers Memorial down at the head of Wabasha Street, and the new Firefighters Memorial on the opposite side of the Veterans Building. We have a memorial to transportation workers who have died inside the DOT building in the lobby. But this project, when it was designed and when it was created, the purpose was, because we have a limited amount of space on the Capitol grounds, this project was created to once and for all dedicate and commemorate all workers, housewives, office workers, construction workers, the trades and labor folks, the people who worked in the mines, etc., the shippers, everyone. And the wall, as it now stands, was completed using state dollars, $150,000 of state dollars, and the balance of the $435,000 that it took to build was all privately fundraised or other sources. The project, we have a artist that has done work, your packets.
And then going forward, now your request is for what?
The request, Madam Chair, the two end panels in on the west side and one end panel on the east side have inscriptions that were done by Mark Wickstrom. One captures the dedication comments by Vice President Mondale. Another quote at the entry talks about all the hands and the workers, and then the workers' memorial. This would be for the artwork that would be mosaics or, if you will, a stone or porcelain insets into the limestone wall. The artist has done projects at the Wellstone Center on the west side, the LRT station on at the Target Field, on the walls of the Target Field.
So the inscriptions are there, and what we're talking about now, what we see are samples.
Would be the artwork that would go. There's eight panels in between all the inscriptions that are blank at this point, and the intention was always to have some kind of representative art. Women, men, all the different people of color, ability count, people who are in wheelchairs or other disabilities, so that all people who are working would be represented. Like I said, it would be figurative, it would not be literal, but it would be, the artists had done different representations of people, baseball players and people on the west side, etc. So this would be artwork that would be inset into the limestone panels using either porcelain or natural stone, showing the different images of workers, and then complete the wall.
And is the artist here?
The artist is here if you'd like to hear from him.
Well, I didn't know if he was intending to speak or
yes.
Just
okay.
Questions. And Mr. Melander is joining us at the table.
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Harry Melander. I work for the Minnesota Building Construction Trades Council that represents about 55,000 plus workers in Minnesota. my comments will be brief. What I would like to say, though, as a father of a soon-to-be major who walked the streets of Fallujah and Ramadi and the mountains of Afghanistan, I think it's really important that we recognize our veterans. And as a would-be brother-in-law who never made it back from Vietnam, I think it's important that we don't make those mistakes again. Workers' Memorial is really important. It recognizes, as Dave said, not only people within the construction industry, but all occupations across Minnesota. I had the opportunity, unfortunately, to talk to a young man who about 3 years ago was in Minneapolis. He and his father were both iron workers and taking down a crane. And unfortunately, when it came down, he watched his father fall to his death. I can go on and tell stories about that happen yearly. We're doing a better job because of the good work that you do with supporting the Department of Labor and Industry and our OSHA regulations. But this really gives a person, families, an opportunity to reflect those that unfortunately as veterans lost their life in the workplace, that all planned to come home and feed their family but didn't make it home. So whatever help you can give us in the memorial in the state of Minnesota, we greatly appreciate.
Mr. David.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. It's a great honor for me to be here. It's a great honor to be asked to work on this project. Really what it's about is the ethic of work and how that's built our great state. And as I travel around the country, I realize that Minnesota's got a great work ethic. I've been at it myself since I was 12 years old, and I'm sure you probably are there too. And so that's what this is about, and for me it's a sacred place, and what I can say is I'll do my best to create
something worthy of the workers in this state, those that have lost their lives and all of us that are working today. And also, I think we should think about the future, too. I mean, we're looking at 100 years or more that this will stand. And so I also hope to address those that work in the future. And if you have any questions about the materials or the medium, I can answer those.
Are some of the pictures that we see your work?
Those are all my work, all yes. Yeah, I'm trained as a painter, but I got into working with stone quite a few years ago, and so I basically, most of my work these days are what I call murals in stone. And I just completed a project for the state of Minnesota on the New Hastings Bridge. So if you go on Main Street, which is 2nd Street, downtown Hastings, you'll go under Highway 61. They've created two plazas, and I created two historic-type murals on the abutments down there. I'm working on a large project now for the Ballpark Authority is my commissioning agency, but they're building a new train station, the light rail, the terminus of the light rail, and where the North Star Line comes in Minneapolis. We're just completing, they're planning on opening that station on the 17th of May, so we're trying to get that done. But it's basically work in stone, it's pictorial images in stone.
Representative Mahoney, is your question to the artist, or who do you Representative Mahoney? To Mr. Melander.
Madam Chair, my question is to Mr. Melander's or somebody that can. Okay. I'm just wondering how, in any given year, how many people are killed on the job.
Mr. Melander, do you have that?
Through the chair to Representative Mahoney. Not an accurate number. I can get it to you, Representative Mahoney, but it's not decreasing. You're doing a much better job by a funding department that works out for workplace safety, but it continues to grow, and we want to start going the other way.
Follow up,
Madam Chair, and I understand that. I understand you may not have the number, but in the picture that was put in our packet, there's just a little. I think it's 8 crosses that are in that. Are those crosses signifying men and women that were killed on the job in that particular year?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, those are only workers that were killed on construction jobs. There's also workers that were killed within farm accidents and mining accidents, so those only represent people from the building trades community.
Thank you.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment about this is that, you know, Mr. Rowe mentioned the Milford Mine disaster, which was up in the Crosby area that I had for a while, and now Representative Dinovich has. The largest mining disaster taking the largest number of lives in the history of mining, and I think it was 42, I don't remember the exact number at this point or whatever. And way back when in my beginning of my career, I think I talked to Mr. Mandel, actually introduced legislation to try to, you know, get the Milford Mine as part of the memorial down there. And so, members, due to that disaster, we just dedicated a small park up in Kuna for the Milford disaster. And I remember somebody saying that, you know, through this disaster and through the Edmund Fitzgerald and through all disasters, people losing their lives, workers have become safer because others have lost their lives. And I think that going forward, wherever that artist went, you know, I hope that that is part of the theme of this, of the whole memorial as well, is that the future workers are safer in a better situation because of others that have lost their lives as well. So I just wanted to make that comment, Madam Chair.
Representative Carlson, do you have concluding comments? We're ready to move on. Oh, we have one more question, Representative Earhart.
Actually, I think I have two, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
Is this a veterans memorial as well as a memorial to workers, or is it also a veterans memorial who were workers? I hear veterans come in there, but I'm not quite sure.
Mr. Mandel.
Madam Chair, all veterans are recognized in the Court of Honor, and there are various plaques in there. There's also been the Vietnam Memorial, the Korean Memorial, the World War II Memorial, and we are this spring breaking ground on the military family tribute to the families. This is for workers. This is Minnesota workers. in all professions, in all lives of work. And I do need to add, in the Senate testimony, we reduced the amount of $500,000 to $250,000 because in discussions with the artist, we came down in the cost estimate. And to Representative Ward's point, part of this work, in addition to the artwork of Craig, would be Mark doing one more inscription recognizing the key events where a large number of people were lost, including Washburn Mill and the Cuyuna and Edmund Fitzgerald, and that would be inscribed in the remaining panel.
I think he has one additional question.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Is this, there's no matching funds for this. This is a state project and we're providing money for it. Is that, do I understand?
Yeah.
At this point, there is no request for matching. As I pointed out, the 150 that built the wall was state dollars, and then the balance was all matching funds, private sources, and other sources. So at this point, we're hoping for a state infusion at this point rather than a match.
Representative Spitzinski?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a general question. How does the bidding process work? It sounds like we're working with one vendor here. Is there a bid that needs to go out publicly because we're using state funds with every single project? How does that work?
What do you do with an artist, Mr. Mandel?
Madam Chair, in this case, it'd probably be a sole source, which is what we did with the inscriptions. Mark Wickstrom, who's a master carver trained in Europe, and there's very few of them around. So when we have a sole source, in this case, we know his work. We know this is what is representative of what we want to do. And it would the specs would be extremely difficult to put into a bid document and get that back. So the intention is to do a sole source with the artist in this case.
Representative Carlson, we'll just have you continue quickly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just very quickly, as Mr. Rowe pointed out, when we initially built the memorial, it was understood at the time that that was a start and that it one day would need to be completed, and that's what we're attempting to do here with the legislation that's before the committee. So I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair,
thank
members
you.
Of the committee, and those who testified. Thank you.
Thank you. And is Representative Lash in the room? Oh, here he is. Okay. We'll transition.
Thank you.
And Representative Lash, we've been we're trying to stay on schedule, so the couple of testifiers would join you up at the table so that we have a transition that's fairly quick. Welcome
thank you.
To the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And testifiers are joining me. I will begin with saying this. There are still some new folks around here that are unfamiliar with who our Hmong and Lao veterans are in the state of Minnesota. So I'll tell you a brief story. When I was 14 years old, I was sitting down at a family dinner with my family, and my big brother heard a knock. There was a knock at the door. My big brother went down and checked the door, and he said, "Hey, John, there's a friend of yours down at the door." And I went. I left the dinner table while he sat back down, and went to the door. And it turns out it was the local bully at the school who had showed up with four of his buddies, who apparently I had offended in some way. And so he had gotten me. He said, "Hey, we got a beef with you." Well, I was never one to really back down, and so I said, "Okay." And they wanted me to come outside.
What the transition is.
Yeah, trust me on this. Believe me, I've got a point to this. And so I went around the side of the garage, and the one bully decided that he was going to come after me. So we got in a fight, and then two of his friends jumped in, and I knew I was in trouble. And I turned around, and there was my big brother tearing around the side of the garage to help me out. And my big brother and I never really got along, but he helped me out in that situation. And these folks, these people next to me, are the big brother of United States soldiers and airmen in Southeast Asia during the war in Vietnam. We didn't initially ask for their help, but they helped us out anyway during a tough time in a war that was unpopular here at home, and they paid for it with their families and their lives, and they were completely displaced. This memorial recognizes their efforts for so many of us and so many of our families
that gave the ultimate sacrifice during that war. So this memorial itself, they've got it all set up. It was originally started out by Cy Tao and also in the Senate by, I had this here in my notes, but Cy Tao, I remember in the House, started this out years ago. And he worked everything out with the Cap Board, got a space down on the Capitol Mall. They had it designed. Everything's worked out. But the promise was that we were going to raise a certain amount of money from the community, and then the rest would be matched by the state of Minnesota. And we couldn't quite get there. Well, I'm pleased to announce that this year we're almost there. They've made extraordinary strides in funding the match. And here we go. Yes, it was Cy Tao and Steve Murphy who originally started this out in 2006. So they worked with the Cap Board. Note that Minnesota is the second largest population of Hmong and Lao, and the folks in who are the veterans in the United States of America. So it's very significant. But with that, I would introduce my testifiers who can tell you more about the details of what they've done, Madam Chair.
Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record. Who's going first?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Nam Phu Tao. I'm a local attorney here. I'm here because I'm a product of the Secret War. My father served in the war. Actually, I could probably say most of us are products of the Secret War. And we come before you today to ask for your support of the Hmong Lao Veterans Commemorative Bill. It's been 53 years since the Secret War started. And 50 years ago, Hmong Lao soldiers took up arms. And they didn't know what they were fighting for then. But now we know that they were fighting for freedom and democracy and defending communism, the spread of communism in Laos. Most of them are no longer here with us today. I do have three of the veterans present here today in front of you, Madam, and committee members. And they are Captain Charles Zhu, Captain Sai Nu Vang, and Captain Tu Duo Yang. And most of, like I said, most of them died fighting to prevent the spread of communism, to protect freedom and democracy in the, on behalf of the United States and Laos. But the few that are left, they're anxiously awaiting, or they're anxiously, you know, looking for some type of acknowledgement for their service. And today we come here before you to ask for that support, to help raise the Hmong Lao Veterans Commemorative Monument and the bill. Now, for 40 years now, the first Hmong and Lao immigrant came to the United States in the mid-1975. And since then, the Hmong and Lao community have contributed many, many things to the state of Minnesota, and particularly the Twin Cities area. From those days until today, we've seen a lot of improvement. We've seen a lot of advancement. I came here and visited St. Paul back in the early 90s, and I went through through University Avenue. I was a teenager back then, but even as a teenager, I was afraid for my safety. But today, I'm no longer afraid. Actually, my office is right on University, and I believe that is a part that has something to do with the Hmong and the Lao settlement here. They did a lot to improve that avenue. And in the last 20 years, we see the state has seen a lot of professional growth, from especially from the Hmong and Lao community. Like myself, I've flourished. I've thanked the country of the United States to give me an education to become an attorney. And I've seen a lot of my colleagues become doctors, lawyers, entrepreneurs, business owners, community leaders. Especially this year, we've seen the city council and Mr. Dai Tao. We see school board Chu Vu. We see the city council Long Yang, who has took the fruits of the Secret War. The parents served, and they were able to come here to become a part of the state, to become a part of democracy and freedom. And they proudly serve that opportunity. And today, we see a lot of Hmong and Lao businesses. To mention some of them, we see the Hmong Professional Building, owned by Mr. Dr. Tongku Veng, Veng Dental. He came and he fixed that building up, and he turned it into a professional building where it once used to be a dilapidated, vacant building. We see Hmong Town Marketplace down on Como. We see Hmong Village on the east side. We see JB Realty managing, fixing a lot of buildings and turning them into vibrant business locations. We see Longqing Hmong Livestock on the South St. Paul. They contributed greatly to the economy of Minnesota. And then we see modern businesses such as Woodbury Plastic Surgery, Dr. David Tao, who has become one of the one of Minnesota's top plastic surgeons. And then we have, you know, the many professional law firms as myself, and medical clinics and tax offices. And this is all because of our Hmong Lao veterans. They chose to take up arms 53 years ago. They believe that protecting freedom, their freedom, they believe that fighting for freedom and democracy in a war that they know nothing about, and 53 years till today, that belief and that sacrifice and that bravery has resulted, has fruited into what we see today.
And then the other gentleman there, are you going to talk about the memorial? Or do we have somebody talking about this?
And I will cover a little bit about the memorial.
We have just a few minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. The memorial, it is what we call a vigorous sprout, madam, and that portrays the struggle, and it signifies the enduring survival of the Hmong and Lao veterans. It will honor and it will commemorate all the sacrifices and all the bravery. It will also serve as a milestone and a historical milestone and a landmarker for generations to come. My children will never know how they came to be, but with the monument, they can go and they can look at and they can read the history. They could understand how their father came to be, how the elders, grandfather and grandmother came to be.
And are we looking at, is this?
Yes, that
is,
Your Honor.
This is the handout members for. I'm going to just break in to tell you we've been joined by a class, ninth grade government students who are observing a House committee, and I think you're probably in a number of other committees. Is that correct? And I'm just looking to see, we don't know what school, right? The Legacy Christian Academy, welcome. We're hearing a number, this is the Capital Investment Committee, and we're hearing a number of bills today that talk about memorials that might be built on the Capitol grounds for a number of functions. So welcome, thanks for being here. Continue.
Thank you, madam. And also, along with the memorial, we will also publish a historical book. This will be a collective personal history of a lot of the veterans. It also will showcase most of the, if not all of the veterans who served. So it will have some type of documentary of the Secret War and the servicemen and women who were involved in that era. And as well, like I said, it's going to be on the state capitol ground. So a lot of the future generations, they will be able to go and read the history, experience the history, the memorial will actually have a lot of the histories etched into the leaves of the sprout. And then on the four corners, they will have the columns there to signify the relationships between the United States, Laos, and the veterans and the Hmong people. So it will be kind of a very, it's a very beautiful monument. It's a very historical, and it's a very commemorative piece of work.
And then we'll have the other testifier briefly.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Michael Tao, and I am a son of one of the veterans, and I met many elderly women and men during the process of establishing monuments. A lot of the elders expressed interest, and they also expressed happiness about the monument that's going to be placed at the Capitol grounds. One elderly woman came to my office yesterday talking about eight family members, her family passed away during the war, during the combat. And in 2007, the first commemoration for the monument size, two elderly ladies came to me in tears, and I asked them, is there anything wrong? Can I do anything? And the two women said, son, we're just so happy to see that there will be a monument in place for us to come and pay respect to our husband and son. So seeing and hearing the sounds and bombs and grenades, explosions, gunshots everywhere in Laos was just typical life for us children until we came to America. And I grew up seeing helicopters came to the airfield with bags of bodies. And the elderly will mourn to the dead the loved one, carry the loved one home and perform spiritual cultural ceremony. And that time I was just a kid. My mother died during the war, where my father still in combat in the front line. My father was home just in time to bury my mother. And you know, I was just 2 years old. My younger brother was just 8 months old. And so can you imagine a military personnel taking care of two young ones and be in the front line at the same time? So there are many children who, like me, share the same stories. My father was a committee member of the Hmong and Lao Veterans Statue Committee, but he passed away in 2008. He didn't have the chance to see the monuments. In November 2009, General Van Pau came, and we talked to him, and his words struck me until this day. He said, son, make sure I get to see the monument. And he didn't get to see the monument. Lately, there were many great former Hmong colonels and captains and other rank officers passing away one by one, not having the opportunity to see the monument. In 2011, I asked myself, how many more elderly have to die before the monuments can be made? With that question in the back of my head, we talked to legislatures and friends to find a way to bring these monuments, because the ground is already committed. The bill is already passed. So luckily we talked to State Representative John Latch and Senator Feng He. We are happy, so happy they are carrying the bill forward. Committee chairs, member of the committee, as finance chairs, I wanted to let you know that we raised $130,000 this day and in matching fund from the community and business owners. And we are going to have a fundraiser this weekend. And I am confident that we'll raise the total fund by the end of the month. So I have all the list of donors all the way from 2007 to today. And we have a total of 861 donors to the monument. So we're here to ask for your support to make this monument possible. We are here today in America, the land of freedom, because the sacrifice the elders made before us. Therefore, yesterday, when I was in my office, when I wasn't in my radio talk show, I was on the radio talk show, many elders called in, and they said, Michael, you go and beg the legislature to fund the monument for us. So, committee chairs and members of the committee, we're here to ask for your support and begging you to fund the monument in the name of the Hmong and Lao veterans and the veterans who served during the war. And I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much for telling the story. Representative Lesh, was Mr. Mandel also going to speak to the issue, or I saw him on our list.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Concluding. So, Representative Lesh. Oh no, we have a couple of questions. Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, I don't have really a question. You know, my district has, and Representative Lesh's district has, a significant number of the veterans that lived in our districts, and in representing that area for the last 16 years, I've been to a number of the funerals of some of those veterans, and this has been a constant in the community. They have been looking to put this memorial up. This is a wonderful piece to honor these men and women, because it's not just the men that sacrificed over in Laos, the women, their wives, and on the field they helped our airmen and our soldiers over there. I fully support this. I need to leave. I have a committee that I have to get ready for my committee this afternoon, but I can't tell the members of this committee how many times the conversations have been held in my district about this and the need to do this. And I want to thank Representative Lesh, but more to the point, the three veterans in the back that have buttonholed me, cornered me into backed me into a corner, asked for my phone number, stopped in my office. This has been something that they have really worked very hard at, and I certainly hope that this is the year that we get this done for them. Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, thank you for bringing this forward. And Senator Hare, two great members. What a great effort. I've been really blessed in the last couple of years meeting Cy Tao, and what a character, and he's missed here, but what a great advocate for the Hmong and Lao community. But he happened to be at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, and if anybody gets a chance to go to that facility, he has a whole wall of his artwork that says the Hmong story through history, and it's a fascinating historical piece. And I see some of this kind of captures kind of so that same sort of artwork and styling, and maybe you can include him. Sometimes I'm jealous he sends pictures now. He's in Florida fishing or something, and that's a little tough to take when we're pale and pasty and, you know, towards May and we haven't seen sunlight. But just want to thank your community, too, for when Senator Hare was elected, he invited so many of us to the festival that your community had, and it was an amazing experience, I'm glad to hear your story of the contributions you are bringing to Minnesota and beyond. But that was a great experience as well, that over at the Prom Center in the East Metro there.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, just quickly, thank you, Madam Chair. As everyone knows, I've been, over the years, past few years, I've been carrying legislation for burial rights in our military veteran cemeteries. And the roadblock we've always run into is that the federal government doesn't recognize these groups because there's federal money being used for our cemeteries. But I do have a question, and thank you again. The role that was played by the Hmong and Laos people in the so-called secret war was a big role for our troops over there. And do you represent all the different groups? I know when I start working on legislation, there was I thought there was just one voice. Are you the one voice for the Hmong and Laos people?
Yes, we are. We are with the military organization. We have four organizations within this community. We're the Hmong and Lao Coalition. Also, we have the Lao Veterans, and we also have the Royal Lao Army Armed Force, the SGU.
Okay.
So they are
with
four
the
organizations. Yeah, they are coalition of four organizations.
Coalition.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh, we are out of time. Can you have some concluding comments?
Please support it. That's my concluding comment, Madam Chair.
They've told the story well. Thank you very much, and thanks for all.
Thank you so much.
We're going to move on to Representative Earhart. We didn't have.
How many people are in here? Three? How many?
Just two of us.
before the rest are coming down. Okay.
Yeah, you can sit up there.
Madam Chair and members, I'm going to introduce some folks, and then we will have Richard Olson, who is the Veterans Memorial Committee Chair, and Scott Neal, the City Manager, speak to the bill. But I would like to introduce Richard Crockett, who is the Foundation Executive Director for the Edina Foundation, and you have to hold your hands up behind me, and three other veterans who are members of the committee, Marshall Schwartz, Bob Benson, and John Curry, who came over to hear the presentation.
Thanks for
this
being
is House File 82 is a an effort to complete the fundraising for the All Veterans Memorial in the city of Edina. A memorial that will be for all veterans. Specifically, it will have the names inscribed somewhere on the memorial of the 31 veterans who have given their lives while being members of the Edina community. And with that said, I'm going to ask Richard Olson, the committee chair for the Veterans Memorial, to speak.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Richard Olson, chair of the Edina Veterans Committee. Good morning to everyone. I was invited to chair the Edina Veterans Committee a little over a year ago after chairing the Edina 4th of July Parade for the past 4 years. And one of the things that gave me the most joy chairing the Edina 4th of July Parade was the first section of the parade that starts at 10 o'clock on July 4th is our veterans. And they go down 50th, and we get the biggest turnout and the biggest applause for the veterans who are in their trucks and in their uniforms as they go down. And so when the city asked me if I'd chair this committee, I thought, you know what, this is something I should do, and I've been happy to do it. As a background, for the last 15 years, I've been in development for the University of Minnesota, Alina, and now Benilde St. Margaret's. So when they asked me to lead up the fundraising, I'm like, you know what, this is something I can do, and I know how the pieces work together. I'm going to introduce Scott Neal to talk to you about what the city's doing for it, and then we'll come back to me, and I'll give you a snapshot of where we are. Last year when we were here, Marshall Schwartz gave a very nice presentation about the memorial and the 32 soldiers and the research he's done and all that. So you've got all that history. So we won't go into, you know, why we're doing it. We'll tell you where we are right now with the project.
That was in the Senate, I think,
Mr. Chair. Neal, do we have any of that information?
That was in the Senate.
Okay.
It was in the Senate, yes.
Mr.
Madam
Neal.
Chair, thank you, and members of the committee. My name is Scott Neal. I'm the city manager in Edina, and Representative Erdahl asked a question earlier about whether there are is there a sub-market of contractors and artists that work on these projects. For me, this happens to be my third project of this nature. I worked in a similar project in the city of Northfield a few years ago, and then just a few years ago in the city of Eden Prairie. In that project, we also did receive $100,000 in a previous bonding bill from the state to assist with that project. The project that we're discussing today is a project that would be the centerpiece of Utley Park, which is a small public park, city-owned park, that's near the intersection of 50th Street and Wooddale Avenue in Edina, kind of in the northeast quadrant of our city. From our city standpoint, this is a public park. We've had this project reviewed by our Park and Recreation Commission and also by our City Council, and they stand behind the project. One of the things I think that's important to you, as you've asked earlier, is do we have a sense of what it means to build projects like these? I think we do as a city government. We also know what it means to maintain them. We have an active parks maintenance division within our city government. We know how to build projects like this. We know how to care for them in the future, and this project is something that we pay very special attention to in the future. We have entered into an agreement with not only the committee but also our community foundation to manage this project on behalf of our city government. So it's kind of uniquely managed in that sense, and we're fully supportive of it. Thank you.
And are you discussing, you've raised the local match at this point?
Well, we're going
back to that.
We're going to come back to that.
So what we do, and I learned it at the University of Minnesota, we track all these gifts through the Edina Community Foundation. Dick Crockett gives us a report. I'm happy to announce that as of Friday, we had cash contributions of $105,657. We've got outstanding pledges of $70,000. And we've got gifts in kind from some of the contractors that are going to work on this project of $80,980. So about $250,000 is what we've raised right now.
Do you have further testimony?
Happy to answer questions.
I think we have no questions. Your presentation must have been very clear. Did any of the other gentlemen wish to speak?
Does anybody want to talk about the project?
Maybe join
at the table so that the mic can pick up here.
Madam Chair,
identify yourself for the
members of the committee. I'm Dick Crockett, the executive director of the Edina Community Foundation. I suppose I'm just going to add a little explanation to the numbers that Richard provided you with by explaining that we've been working at this now for 3 years, even before the bonding bill request was introduced, and we have literally touched all aspects of the community, all sectors of the community, to get support. The city has contributed some money. The foundation has contributed some of the money that has come from its general donors. We have a service club involvement. We have individual donor involvement ranging from $50,000 paid with another $50 pledged down to gifts of $25 to $100. So we're aiming for a kickoff date of July 3rd this year, which is when we have our veterans briefing preceding the 4th of July parade that Richard mentioned. We'd really like to announce we have the money to proceed, and that would be thanks to the Minnesota legislature. I can tell you without that bonding bill support, we're probably not going to have that meeting on July 3rd, and we're going to have a lot of veterans who wonder why we can't get this done. It's very important that you partner with us on this, and we're happy and honored to serve with the legislature in being primary movers behind this project.
And we'll give there are no questions, so Representative Earhart will give you the last word if you have any concluding remarks.
Madam Chair and members, we very much appreciate your support on this, and apparently it's a good project because we didn't have any questions. So
you were obviously very clear.
Thank you very much for your...
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yes. And Representative Russo is here. Our last bill up. We're talking about reinvestment in Minnesota critical habitat, and you are joined by a couple of people at the table. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee.
A little shift in subject now.
Yes. I see it's Veterans Day here, except for me. This is House Bill 3053, which is to appropriate $3 million from bond proceeds to provide the state match for the Reinvest in Minnesota Critical Habitat matching money. This is the matching funds for when you donate to Critical Habitat via the Critical Habitat plates. We've got a chickadee and loons at my house. Some people have deer, and I have Scott Neal and Dick Crockett. Scott Neal and Dick Crockett. Excuse me, I'm looking at the wrong line. Excuse me, Patrick Rivers and Steve Chaplin with me to testify.
And who's first? Welcome. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Thank you for the time. For the record, my name is Pat Rivers. I work for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, Division of Fish and Wildlife, and the Land Acquisition Supervisor for that division. Now, the Reinvest in Minnesota Critical Habitat Matching Program has been around since 1986. The two primary funding sources have been bonding and also the critical habitat matching plates, just referenced by Representative Russo. This program takes the donated value from the private citizens, either cash or land value, and matches it with state funds to purchase critical habitat throughout the state. It does allow donations large and small. We've had donations as small as $10 to $15 on up over millions of dollars. Since 1992, we've had 22 donations of private land or cash in excess of $500,000. For the Fish and Wildlife Division acquisitions that we work with, we seek donations with virtually every acquisition so that we can leverage those donations and acquire critical habitat elsewhere. And after habitat quality, certainly the ability of a landowner to donate value is one of the key things we look at. It's been a very successful program over the last several decades, and hope to get additional funding through this funding request. I'm going to turn it over to
Chapman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Chaplin. I'm with I'm a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy. The RIM Critical Habitat Private Sector Matching Program is perhaps the most cost-effective habitat conservation for fish, wildlife, and native plants in Minnesota. For every state dollar invested, at least another dollar from private sources is donated to acquire state lands for outdoor recreation. The Nature Conservancy has donated $9.8 million in land, cash, or services that the DNR has used to acquire 27,636 acres in 58 tracts. One thing to keep in mind is that the DNR only accepts lands that meets their priorities and purchases lands that are joint priorities of theirs and the donors to acquire WMAs, SNAs, and other state recreational lands. Just to give you a few examples, the Felton WMA, which is a wet prairie habitat in Clay County on the Agassiz Beach Ridges, is a project. Mille Lacs Moraine SNA, Mixed Forest in Crow Wing County, near Strand Woods State Park, Big Woods in Rice County, Lake Bronson Parkland Peatlands in Kitson County, Savage Fen SNA at Calcareous Fen in Scott County, and Lockheed Powell WMA, Mesic Prairie in Lockheed Powell County. All of these are lands of high biodiversity significance that have had at least one project through the RIM Critical Habitat Program. Now, beyond the $9.8 million in RIM credits that are generated from TNC donations, there has been at least another there have been at least several million more dollars that TNC has donated that are currently unused. These are RIM credits that are sitting in a bank until the state can come up with funds to be able to match the private donations that are out there. The Critical Habitat Program protects important lands for biodiversity and at a cost for much less than 50 cents on the dollars. For instance, TNC donates the land that we donate at book value, not at fair market value. So that is actually an increased leverage as well. With that big backlog of RIM critical habitat money, this $3.5 million a year that the state license plates actually generates does not cut into that backlog very much. And for that reason, the Minnesota legislature has supplemented license plate funds with bonding funds about every 3 years. The last two were 2008 and 2010, each were $3 million. So it's now time for another contribution from bonding, and for that reason, we're asking your support for another $3 million a year in capital investment funds.
We have a couple of questions. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My first question would go to the testifier just now. So does that suggest that we have private donations equaling the amount that the bond request is for?
More than that, there's a backlog, Madam Chair and members of the committee, more than that, there's a backlog now of private donations that have already been made that exceeds $11 million.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm familiar from looking at the website for this that you also receive funding from the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment. Could you speak to that in terms of the involvement that that provision allows for your organization or for this
Chaplin.
Endeavor?
Mr. Chaplin.
For the Nature Conservancy? Or for this particular mm-hmm. program? I think maybe I ought to ask Mr. Rivers to answer that question. I'm not as familiar with that.
Mr. Rivers.
Madam Chair.
Did you understand the question?
I do, and I'm not aware that we do receive funding through the Legacy Amendment for Reinvest in Minnesota Critical Habitat Match.
I have no questions.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions, too. You were asking for $3 million. It looks like the DNR is also putting in another request separately for another $3 million. Is that correct? Or is that just one request?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, no, it's one request.
Okay. And you've got the $3.5 million, and you've got other money used. And according to what I'm looking at, you actually... in either protections or enhancements, you're over 150,000 acres?
Correct.
Mr. Rivers.
And, Madam Chair, and do you have a goal that you want to get to, or are you just going to keep buying until you have it all?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, we do have acquisition plans for the SNA program, for the Wildlife Management Area program. We do not plan to buy it all. We buy critical habitat when it's available from willing sellers, and to date that hasn't been exhausted. Many of the counties we work in the Southwest have less than 2% public ownership of lands. And again, we are working with willing sellers, and also we receive county board approval for any acquisitions we acquire or we seek.
And so, in other words, Representative Russo's bill is bringing forward the DNR requests. They're not duplicative, is what I hear you
say. Madam Chair, correct.
Representative Green.
Yep, thank you for that. And yes, I realize there's some counties that don't have a lot of public land, but there's other counties that have considerable public land. In Monoman County, for instance, where I'm from, 25% of the land is in public ownership. That's where we get our tax base from. So, and there's other counties that may even be worse. Excuse me, I apologize for that. I meant to say 25% is publicly owned. And so, you know, you're taking out a quarter of our property already. And what I want to know is there a goal? I mean, do you have a goal where you're going to say we expect to put this many acres in, or is it just open-ended?
Mr. Rivers?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, I would need to go back to the individual plans. The WMA acquisition plan that was published in 2002, going up for 50 years, called for 700,000 acres across the state. It certainly would be geared at counties with lower public ownership than counties like your own and Lake County, and as an example of one that has high public ownership. And again, I'll go back to the county board approval that we seek with all Reinvest Minnesota acquisitions as getting that approval from the county board before we close on a property.
Just one more statement, because I'm just going to reiterate that the state of Minnesota right now has about 25% of its property in some form of public ownership. And you're talking now about another 750,000. That's just in the RIM program. We're just getting out of hand.
Mr. Rivers?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, that isn't the RIM program. That's for the entire wildlife management area system. And it's a long-term goal. I don't know that we'll get there, but it's a long-term goal that was developed by the citizens of Minnesota in coordination with the Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Green, further? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's my understanding that there's $9.7 million in Lassard Sam's out there Heritage Council for RIM land. Is that correct?
It might be helpful because we're talking two different programs, right? And maybe you could describe
that.
Sure. Madam Chair, Mr. Representative Rivers. Gunther, this program is dealing with fee title acquisition for land. The Reinvest Minnesota program that is in the Lassard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is an easement program run through the Board of Water and Soil Resources, a completely different program. The land stays in private ownership. I believe there are restrictions placed on the land in terms of what can be done with it with that easement.
So there's Bowser and there's DNR, and they have different purposes when they are preserving the land. And maybe would it be helpful to talk about that just a bit?
Sure, Madam Chair. In areas where Bowser easements, and I shouldn't speak for Bowser RIM easements, but I'll try briefly here, where there's a real need for permanent soil or permanent vegetation on the ground, the landowners will be offered a RIM Reinvest Minnesota Bowser easement, which says, you know, that landowners can't do certain things like till it or allow for any kind of farming activities. The goal of that is to keep soil on the ground and keep water on the landscape. It's a different goal than protecting critical habitat for fish and wildlife species, which is the program that we're working on. They are complementary at times, but they do serve a different mission.
Thank you.
And so one really is for the purpose of, in some ways, preventing future problems, like, I mean, we do flood mitigation, et cetera, with RIM. And this one is saving critical habitat in key areas is what I understand.
Correct.
Two different departments. To the, you know, I think the underlying question here is this sort of ongoing concern that we have some limitations, that we don't just keep on buying land, but that we have particular targeted reasons, and I think that was maybe one of the underlying issues, and I don't know if you want to speak more to that issue.
Madam Chair, to that issue, that recently the Minnesota Conservation Partners have developed the Minnesota Conservation Prairie Plan for the prairie region, the agricultural part of the state, that set out very specific goals for the next 25 years of what we hope to accomplish in habitat conservation for that 21 million acres of Minnesota, about half of Minnesota. So that does lay out where and what sort of things we hope to accomplish. A great deal of that is going to be on temporary conservation contracts and with easements where the land stays in private ownership. But, you know, this is really a first attempt to answer the question that Representative Green asked, is how much is enough? What do we hope to accomplish in the prairie region of Minnesota?
Any further comments? Do we have Representative Gunther, where you were finished? Questions? And I see no further questions, concluding comments from any. Representative, you
thank you, Madam
last
Chair.
Word?
You know, we're fortunate to have people that are willing to donate to contribute toward these goals. And this is a small piece of enabling us to continue to do this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Ward, minutes of March 20.
Read, Madam Chair, and move approval.
Corrections, additions, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, those minutes are approved. Members, on Thursday, we're going to have a very brief meeting. Occasionally we move vehicles that we're going to park somewhere, and that's what the bill on Thursday is. We've chosen a bill, however, that has special significance that day. That happens to be the day when housing advocates might be coming to it's their day on the Hill. And this is the bill that's targeted specifically to the 20 million public housing and 80 million in housing infrastructure bonds. We have bipartisan authorship of it. I think I don't know what number we've reached by now, but that community has worked very hard. But this is a bill we're moving, and just in open transparency, it's one of those vehicles we'll park in the event that we have. Unexpected. I don't know if I've ever used any of those, but to be prepared for unexpected consequences.
Madam Chair, is there anyone who is advocating for that in the Twin Cities that hasn't been here?
Well, actually, they won't be. They're going to be at another event. They're having their big rally, so they won't even be in the room at the time.
Okay.
But it's just using that as.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say on those vehicles. I've done the same thing, and I have used a couple of them through the years.
I've always been advised to do it, but I just can't remember that I've ever needed them. So that's our agenda that way. Meeting is adjourned.